Hello, everyone, again. Hey, Bridget. Pardon me. Hello, Eric.
Hi, I'm here.
Good to see you. I just
Yeah,
getting
same.
some feedback from me today. All right. Welcome to this Growth Summit section on choosing your channel. Choosing your channel is really about getting clear on the avenues by which you're going to create your lead gen. So whether it's client referrals, it's still a source of new quote leads, to use sort of modern marketing terminology, right? In services professions, we tend to call them prospects, right? In the broader world, they tend to call them leads. So with that in mind, when I say leads, don't think in any way that I'm being less loving or personal. That's just the vernacular, if you will. Right, podcast is a channel for driving business to you. So our goal when we're choosing channels is ultimately to get clear on what a marketing channel is, which, as I said, is just a pathway to bring information or services to the people you want to work with. So you want to reach your audience, you want to boost brand awareness, you want to spark engagement, and you ultimately want that kind of curiosity and education to turn into a new prospect, which in the ideal, if they are a fit, will turn into a new lead. So when you think about channels, imagine that you are in the center of roads, right? And it's all roads lead to Rome, right? We've got our client referrals, we've got centers of influence, we've got, if you're Adam, the podcast, right? Each of those basically stream those leads into you. And as we'll talk about later today, all of those flow through your website, which is why you really need a website that works, because in this day and age, you are throwing money into a hole if you have a coffee table book, right? A pretty website versus a conversion engine where leads actually come flow through in an intended path and come out the other end, right, at the conversion numbers that you ultimately want to see. So if you need to work on your website and get there, then that's a great session to join today or to watch later. A marketing channel is what drives people to you and your website, because that is, in this day and age, the proxy for you. Which you can really leverage to scale your marketing, by the way. One of the challenges is for all of us, if you have a practice, it means you're the kind of person that likes people and ideas most of the time. So we like more of them, and kind of like going to the buffet. Eric, if I went to the buffet and I said, go for it, and you were really hungry, you would, what would happen a short time later?
So terrible.
You would feel not so great, right? You would be overwhelmed. You would really like, I need to burp, like, and you would take a long break from eating. So one of the big mistakes that we see in marketing is yo-yo marketing, right? Where we need leads, so we go out and get some, then we get busy, so we stop. And part of the reason that happens is when we go to the buffet, we go to the buffet. Again, that discernment and discipline of what's a right-sized portion for what I need right now. And we take on too much. 90% of the time when we do that, we fail miserably, not because it has to fail, but because we make decisions that compromise the result. We don't really vet vendors well. We don't really spend the time that we need. We do it at the last minute. That was my mistake, right? I was doing a big project and I was like, I'll just go hire somebody really expensive and awesome, and that'll be all I need to do. And ask Mark, like, no, that was not all I needed to do. Like, right, there's a level of involvement that you always need to have, but you got to leverage that with, right, what you're talented at versus not. And right, so it's really about keeping it simple in the beginning. Do not let your eyes get bigger than your stomach. At the end of today, and these are the base lessons, your brain is going to be like, whoa. And I want you to think of laying that track from California to New York. You're just taking a section at a time. You're laying the track so that you've got it in place, and then you're going to go back and revise each. With channels, that version is don't do nine channels at once. If I give Mark a bucket of water and I give him nine gardens, and I say, Mark, you have to keep nine gardens alive with this one bucket of water, which is, by the way, enough for one really good garden, what's Mark's growth experience going to be like? How are those gardens going to do? He's going to spend a lot of time spinning, and he's going to be like just giving it what it needs just to get by. And then he's going to be moving to the next one and the next one. And that's what, for a lot of us, marketing can feel like if we're not focusing. So we want to do it in stages, right? We've got our appetizers, Got to know who our client is, got to know what our services are, what we're going to charge them, got to know what the service model is, we got to know how to tell the story, right? Each of those is right. Appies, main course, dessert, aperitifs. It's not a race against the clock. Now, if you are in that, hey, I've got to get clients right now stage, it means you generally have some time. And this is not a 10-year process. Like you can knock out V1 of all of this in a year. You can lay those tracks and then you go back and refine it. So when we talk about channels, it's really a conversation about how you're going to tell your story. The premise is, and the part we skip over, and I do not want you to forget, is that the whole goal is to tell your story. David, how are you going to deliver value to someone, right? Going back to that branding lesson, a brand isn't a logo or a website or a service model. A brand is a promise that you make to the marketplace that says, you can count on me too, right? Limitless's brand, it shows up in different words and stories and images. But if you go look, it's some version of, right, success that comes with freedom to enjoy it. Right, you're going to see it, right? Wildly successful business in life you love, $1 million 100-day practice, elevate your work, wealth, and well-being, right? It all iterations of success and freedom. That's our core brand promise. That's what we deliver, right? If you show up and follow the process, that's what you want to tell with your story. That's what marketing is. You have a need. Here's how I'm going to solve it. Let me show you how I can solve it. So we'll talk more about that in marketing plan, which I believe follows this lesson. But I want you to start with the premise that no matter who you are, no matter what your personality is, no matter how utterly incapable you feel of marketing, you have a story to share. And I promise you, there is a way to share it now more than ever. My God, you could do a digital avatar of yourself. Literally, you could record yourself and pay somebody on Fiverr in the Philippines $25 an hour to do digital videos of you, and it would be super cool. There is just no reason or excuse outside of the ones that we create to not be clear that we have a story to tell, to get clear on what that story is. And now you're here, which is choosing the means by which you will share that story to draw the right people into you. Things that come up when we think about choosing our channels, whether it's podcasting or networking or, asking clients for referrals, there's always head trash that holds us back. The head trash, by the way, is 90% of the reason that you're not growing. Or growing in the way that you want. Step one, we hear there's a lot of talk around content these days, right? In many channels. And what we hear all the time, I don't know what to create. I don't know what to create. I don't know what to create. 5 years ago, that was not a good excuse because you could literally go to Google and type in, there's a whole service of, right, what are people looking, right? Keywords around financial planning. There's all kinds of stuff online, right? You just go Google a topic and get 10 ideas. Now with ChatGPT, zero excuses. I use ChatGPT every single day, every day. I was writing something last Thursday and I was like, how would I organize that? And I was like, I need, give me five ideas for blah, 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 how organize this. And it was like one, two, three, four. I was like, thank you so much. If you go into ChatGPT and you say, what are the top 10 problems retirees have? It will give you them. And then if you say to it, Rashani, write me an article, 500 freeform article, 500 word freeform article, two social posts and a blog post for each of those topics, it will do that too. And then if you say, write it in the voice of Dolly Parton, it will do that too. So I literally have it write stuff and then I'm like, write it in the voice of Stephanie Bogan. And then it writes stuff and I'm like, close. I wouldn't say quite that, but I would say this. Right. So from a content perspective, there is literally no excuse that I don't know what to create. You can ask ChatGPT, what are people asking the internet about financial planning? Give me five topics to talk about today. Another thing, model best practices. Do not steal. I want to be incredibly clear about that. But if you're in retirement and you want to start a podcast, go listen to all the retirement podcasts. Look at all the episode titles. What are the topics they're covering? What's your version of that? There's like, you should, Rashani, you can come up with 500 topics for a podcast before you ever start. You can call Matt Hollerin or FICOM. Like, they have great programs where they can support you and do the content. You don't even have to do that, Right. So there's a do-it-yourself version, and there's a right, delegate all of it to someone who really knows, and there's everything in between with any of your channels. It's about where you're going to be on that spectrum, but it cannot be, I don't know how, or I don't have the time, because those, again, right, are just excuses that we make to keep ourselves from that next level of excellence and growth. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. Anyone here, honestly, you're like, oh, I have to read it, I have to revise it. That, right, that need for perfection is going to really slow you down. What I always say is get content out consistently and then look at the data and decide if people are reading it. And if they're reading it, they're liking it. If you have people who are reading it and it's, they're not like consistent, then go back and change the quality. Should I use this service? Someone will ask me all the time. And I'm like, well, if it's that or nothing, I would start with the service because that's better than nothing. But again, with each of those services, you're going to get a lot more lift if you curate that content, if you invest a little of your own time. If you just take canned content off the shelf, throw it on the internet, and expect people to come flocking to you, it doesn't quite work like that. Right? You've got to curate it a bit because you are still selling you and your story. You're just going to package it, right, in an incredible way. You're worried that no one is paying attention. It will feel like that for quite a while. I still sometimes feel like that. I'll do a post and then no one will do anything. And I'll be like, really? I thought that was so good. And then I'll do something that's like totally off the cuff and like 29 people will love it. And I'll be like, who knew? So the thing with content is you want to judge the quality of it in that you want it to be good enough. Right? Like it can't be complete junk. But after that, guys, it's just got to be good enough. 70% is your launch point. I call it launch and learn. If you wait for 80, 90, or 100, people with half your talent, care, and ability are going to be growing past you at a rapid rate while you sit in your office wondering why. Did you catch that? You are all there. You give and you care, and you're sitting there waiting for people to knock on your door. And we have to get over the head trash that keeps us from climbing on the roof and shouting loudly and proudly, I'm David. Here's who do I do my best work with. Here's the value I can deliver without apology or hesitation, because 9 out of 10 people will go the other way. And we're so afraid of what that will mean that we forget that that 1 out of 10 people is going to come running up the ladder to work with us. We focus on the nine and not the one. And that's what this slide is about. We always, our brain is hardwired to focus on the negative compared to the positive by a factor of 9 to 1. The deck is stacked against you by a factor of 9 to 1, Joshua. If you say, I'm going to do it different tomorrow, those are your odds. That's why we have to sit in that 5% of our headspace that we have control over. Remember, 95% of our thinking is automatic. We have to sit. Have conversations like this, breathe, get still, and go, God, is Steph right? Like, is all this stuff around marketing? Have I been making some excuses? Have I been blaming the vendor or the process or the this? And maybe those things are true, by the way, but have I really done the work of asking myself, how do I want to grow? Have I gotten intentional? Have I really made decisions? Like, am I really making it harder than it needs to be? And the answer is a resounding probably yes, right? For each of you, that answer might be different, but that's the conversation. We're so afraid. You think FOMO is bad? FOPO is way worse than FOMO. FOPO is fear of other people's opinions. I was talking to a client about redoing a website, and he wanted to do something like old people walking hand in hand on the beach. And I showed him this really radical website someone has done that was really amazing and different. And he was like, what will people think? And I was like, they'll think you're different. I'm like, he was like so overwhelmed by the idea that he didn't look boring like everybody else, because it might mean, I don't know, what would it mean if you had, Rashani, like a cool, edgy website as a retirement planner? Like, what would it mean that you, like, it could mean that you were not cool, but it could also mean that you were just progressive and young and expert and smart, and you weren't going to die with your clients, which is what older clients are worried about when they look at their advisor and they see someone as old as them, right? Like, you'd be surprised. I say this with all love. Older people are not like dead and stodgy anymore. Like, they're on the internet. They're doing cool stuff. They like unique things. They like people who know what they're about. And I can't afford, we talked about this. You might not have a lot of capital. What I do want you to get really clear on, crystal clear, is what do you have? Right. So when you go through the marketing plan workbook, which we'll talk about in that lesson, one of the first questions is how much time, how much money, not just rate money, but time. Those are the two variables. And then you've got team. What leverage do you have? You've got an internal team helping. If you've got marketing vendors, right? So it's really those are the variables that you have to play with. So this is that moment where you get really clear on what's happening activity-wise versus what's happening, what's our state of being around marketing? Are we clear? Are we conscious? Are we really committing to causes and actions and things that are really aligned? Or are we doing what we tend to do, which is play that mighty game of whack-a-mole where we show up with a good heart and we do good work? Good ideas come to us. We have some people, good stuff happens, by the way. But that's entirely different than doing it with a clear headspace and a lot of intention. And that's where you start to see those results that Taylors and the Cathys and the Adams have gotten because, right, they're getting rid of the excess baggage, both in their mindset and in their methods. So we talked about this in today's opening. If the lifetime value of a client is $60,000, right, 20 years at a 30% margin, what is a reasonable amount to invest? Again, your capital has a lot to do with it, right? If you're tight on capital, we're going to think about how to create leverage with our channels so we can maximize those dollars. If you're like, hey, I was just talking with one of our leaders, the firm that they are partners with, you guys will love this, gave them $65,000 to go market. And I was like, yes, let's do it. This is going to be awesome. And I was like, but don't just go throwing money in a hole. Like, we cannot do that. Like, we're going to be really thoughtful. We're going to be really intentional. We're going to measure the ROI. And so the question is, how much do you have to invest in marketing? How much are you willing to invest in marketing? I am not suggesting that you all run out and do this, but Michael will tell you, he's said it in many of the webinars we've done around, right, his growth. And part of that is a huge part of that is mindset. And he said, at one point, I stopped investing in my 401k because I felt like I could get a better return as an entrepreneur and a founder. And I would argue that he has many times over. I'm sure he's investing in it again now. And I'm not saying, right, but as an entrepreneur, for those of you that work with entrepreneurs, you understand it's not all about just putting your money in the stock market, right? It's about your entire portfolio of wealth. And a huge part of that is your business. So from a business, growth perspective, but from a value and a net worth perspective, like this is for most of you, your largest asset. Are you optimizing it? If you did 20% better every year, not because of hard work, but because of what you learn here. What would the value of that be over 20 years, David? Like it would compound into millions, right? If you generate another $80,000 a year over 20 years, that would be, right, $2.96 million at 7.5% interest. That puts you at like 6 million. Like you're talking millions of dollars if you make 20, 30, 40, 50, $60,000 more a year. And that is so doable. So let's talk about the actual channels. You've been grounded in the economics of marketing. We've talked about selection and choice was really the conversation we've had up to now. We can't do all of these at once and do them well. I've yet to see anyone do it. I've tried and I fail miserably. What you do want to do is lay the tracks in a couple, get them really going, then you add the next track. Then you add the next track, right? Then you expand. You don't start with an expansion strategy unless you have team and capital. If you do and you've got 65 grand, like call me up. We will have that conversation. It'll be super fun. Everyone else, which is the norm, we want to look at this page and we want to ask ourselves with the time, energy, capital, and team that I have to invest, and that's your framing. What result do I want to get? Right? It's part of the marketing plan process. These are the tools that you have to build the house, David. I'm building the tracks. I should stick my analogies where these are the tools we have to build the track from California to New York. Which tools are we going to use? David's tools might be entirely different than what Leanna needs in her toolbox based on her personality, based on her clients, based on her preferences, based on her capital. She might be like, hey, I'd love to do that. I don't have the money to do that. So I'm going to need to start over here. What Leanna loves and excels at might be entirely different than what Joshua was great at, what he naturally excels at. So when we look at our channels, we want to look at a couple of things, which is we want to look at what the channel is, and we're going to go through each of these. We also want to look at our relationship to it. I love public speaking. Love it. If you said to me, Stephanie, I'm going to put you in front of 5,000 people, I'd be like, let's do it. You said, Stephanie, I'm going to make you write a report that's 50 pages long, I would be like, who could I pay to do that? Literally, that's the first thing that goes through my brain. Who can I pay to do that? Right. So what you want to remember, we talk about energy creating, revenue producing activities. That's this from a growth perspective. Ian, what do you love to do? If now think first stylistically. Do you like to speak? Do you like to write? Do you write? So if you like to speak, for example, right, podcasting, right, webinars, video, great channels for you. If you're like, no people seeing me, just don't love it, that might be a head trash issue we can get over, but we're not trying to fundamentally change you either, right? Like if you're like, hey, my strategy is this, and I really want to tell people, and I'm just not a great speaker, and I want to get better at it, rock and roll, let's do that. If you're like, really hate it, love sitting in my office and doing investment research and writing blogs, that's a different conversation, right? We're going to put you on a podcast. You're going to start writing blogs or white papers, right? You're going to do a like an actual content strategy. It's just not going to be video. So you can really think about that. If you love writing, for example, content is so easy in any channel because between that and the ChatGPTs or the Jaspers, there's so many great apps for content these days that does amazing stuff with AI. So you've got your digital channels, right? Those are all pretty familiar, but that's really where technology has sort of changed the game. You've got your social media, podcasting, radio is the old school version of that. Radio does actually still work. It still exists. Webinar, YouTube, live stream, right? Your kind of video channels. Your website, that's going to be obviously your website itself, your SEO strategy, and your sales funnel, right? Those are channels all in and of themselves. You've got what I call outreach channels. This is the sort of, I call it brand ambassadorship, right? You've got brand PR media, right? You're sort of out, you're doing things, you've got articles, et cetera. Prospect outreach, this could be Google Ads. Lead gen services like Smart Asset. It could be paid solicitors, cold calling, crazy. People still cold call. It still works. It actually has one of the higher effective rates, if you can believe that. It's probably because there's so few people that you have to compete with these days. Content, articles, blogs, white papers. Again, no shortage of content available or that you can create to put out there. So those are sort of your general, right? Very scalable outreach channels. As are your digital channels. Your personal channels, you can scale them a la limitless style, but in general, they are more a one to one or one to few, whereas outreach and digital are very one to many, right? Much more scalable. This is your speaking. I can speak to 50 people or I can speak to 5,000, but most of the speaking that you will do will be to smaller groups, right? It's an intimate one to few-ish, if you will. Workshops, webinars, again, it's the virtual version of speaking. Client referrals, obviously, right? Very belly to belly. And then COIs, there's a ton that you can do building out your COI campaigns. We call them like COI service models and using tech. Basically, think of a COI service model. There's a ton that you can do to deepen relationships and drip value. And then show up in a hyper specialized way, which is what we teach you in that lesson. But it's still a relational, right? To an extent, it is still very belly to belly. You got to see them a couple times a year. You got to keep those relationships going. So these are the core. There are a couple fringe ones out there that most of you are never going to touch, but like this is the core of what 99.9% of advisors are doing. Most advisors are doing, right, the traditional things. These are those three channel types. Digital is about using online tools to get your brand out there. It's your website, it's the videos, it's the podcast. Think digital format, hyper scalable, one to a billion, right? I can get a billion likes on YouTube if I get it right. Outreach is where you're getting proactive. I call it an insertion method. You are inserting yourself in people's ecosystem, right? You're trying to be on LinkedIn, you're in the groups they're in, you're sending emails to CPAs, like whatever it is, you are saying, hey, world, I am here. in a credible and consistent way. And then personal marketing is focused on building those relationships, right? It's more belly to belly, it's more relational marketing. And so Kitsis in his report kind of went through and showed the efficacy of each of these tactics. Advisor satisfaction, referrals obviously rates the highest. You have to work the least hard for it. Solicitors, search engines, paid sponsorships, content creation, revenue per client on average. So again, keep in mind this is the Kitsis study, right? So the audience that's taking that is a pretty good range, but it doesn't include a lot of much larger firms. Right, or in the right 3 million plus, you're just going to see less of that, which is where you're going to get more scale. Shows average client acquisition cost, and then average efficiency, right? Dollars and time relative to return. So again, that's with the lesson on the library, so you can go. It's a great study to read because it just gives you all the details of what's working, who's spending, and how. It's also going to be like a buffet where you go, great. What do I do with all of that information, right? Which is really where we want to look at what can we learn and take away. So key trends from that data are supporting tactics are working. SEO, social media, and newsletters are used by 80% of advisors. They boost the effectiveness of other tactics, what I call stacking, right? If you're in someone's space consistently over and over and over just to add value and be credible, when you have an offer to layer on top of it, you get a lot more attention, right? It's an attention economy. If I buy an email list, for example, and I just start marketing my seminar or my webinar or my offer, whatever it is, they have no relationship with me, zero trust equity, right? So I'm going to get X percent response rate. If I drip on that email list in a value-added way for a period of time, and then I make an offer, I will get a higher response rate. Again, quality of content has an impact on all of that, but all things being equal, when you build trust equity by showing up and delivering value, right, you earn attention rights where they actually will start to look at what you send them. Underappreciated tactics, referrals, and advisor listings. Advisor listings are pretty easy. You do have to pay for them. You also want to make sure you get an ROI. If you get 50 leads a month and you spend a bunch of time on calls and you get one client, it's probably not worth it. So you've really got to look at those services relative to the cost and then the level. We have clients, for example, who are kind of in the general levels and they get enough clients to maybe just make it worth it, but it's a lot of activity, right? It's a lot of prospect calls because, right, they're just not as high a retention. And then we upped them to the premium level, which was significantly more from a cost perspective, but that was it. So my experience with those services is there's a premium level you want to be on it. Otherwise, you're catching scraps. They'll cost more, by the way. And there's a reason for that. Referral generation, 88% of clients use referrals, 62% COIs, both rank in the top three. Again, these are your traditional, more right, kind of relational strategies. High growth practices tend to utilize content, right? Again, because it's broad and it's outreach, blogs, videos, podcasts, because it's a way to package you and your story and your value, or the firm and the story and the value, and get it out to a lot of people quickly, right? And then if we do that consistently, we're stacking over time. Challenges in supporting tactics, getting traction. It's crowded. This is why differentiation matters. If you just take that ChatGPT article and you don't curate your voice to your audience, it'll work, but it won't work near as well, right, as if you optimize that content because now everybody can do that, right? So it was about differentiation before, which was about being out there. Now, as that content space gets more crowded, it's about differentiation. It's about quality of content, right? You're going to see quality of content really start to matter. Client acquisition trends, nearly two-thirds of clients come from referrals, as we know, right? Educational and networking events, those kind of closer-tiered things. For all the conversation we have around digital marketing, the vast majority of firms don't leverage digital marketing or outreach strategies. Most of you are in that personal section of the wheel, or you're experimenting with things, but you really haven't doubled down. So things to think about. So we're going to go through each channel and just give you a little bit of high-level data for you to contemplate. And then if you guys have questions, feel free to drop those in Q&A, and Leona will let me know, and we can grab those at the end. So outreach, right? We've got brand story, prospect content. The Kitsa study on this, postal mail revenue per client had 7,000. They didn't have an acquisition cost on that. Advisor listings, 4,000. Client acquisition cost, 634. Lead gen platforms, revenue per client on average was 4,000, and cold calling was 3,750. So it would seem that cold calling still works, at least in that, right, 250 to 500,000 client range. So the idea, brand media PR, you're never going to be able to articulate that, right? Quote the value of that. If you get really big, you can start to measure it. But it's much more about having brand and position in your space. Adam is, right? He's one of the people in his space because he's got that optometry niche. And so just everywhere they go to conferences, Adam's there. Their journals, Adam's writing there. Right. He has inserted himself as an expert thought leader in that space. And there's a ton of brand power to that. Someone will listen to him for 3 years, or right, they'll see him at conferences and then they'll just call up and be like, "Hey, I know I've been meaning to talk to you for a while." Right. If he were the brand new guy and passing out his card on day one at that moment, he would not get that person. Right. So that's where brand PR really, right? I call it ambassadorship. In your space. If you're all digital, that happens online. If you guys are familiar with Thomas Koppelman, who's great social media presence, he's got a growing practice. There are a number of advisors that do online, literally off Twitter, right? Like a thriving practice off Twitter. And he always goes on there and he goes, "Well, people say you can't get practice clients off Twitter." He's like, "I hope they keep believing that because I'm getting clients off Twitter just fine, like multi-million dollar, $10 million clients." Right. So he's building a brand story, a presence, if you will, in that space by showing up consistently. If you're not, right, but you don't need to do that every day. If you're not generating, right, lead gen through social media, you might need to have a firm presence, if you will, right, put some stuff up once in a while. That's radically different than what Thomas is doing. Again, those ads, lead gen services, solicitors, cold calling, all of them work. The thing about ads, lead gen, and solicitors, I'm not a huge fan of cold calling. If you want to do it, go for it. Do it in a dignified way. Is it's all about capital, right? So if you can, the cost of Google Ads is not that high, right? It's a very low cost of entry. Paid solicitors, depending on what you do there, are going to take a pretty healthy chunk, right? Most of you are not going to start there unless you're like at a firm level and you want someone to go out and start really recruiting clients for you. But like Google Ads, lead gen services, SEO, those things are readily available to everyone. It's really having a story that you can brand, having content that you can get out, having partners or people, right, or a system that you can get that content out by. It's no lack of ability, right, or story or value. It's you guys don't have the marketing machine put in place to get that value in a channel to get it to people consistently. That's the conversation today. Outreach key trends, supporting tactics. We talked about this, right? Support like newsletters. Eric, just somebody just sent me proposals from different marketing agencies they're looking at. One of them is one of the marketing firms, not our friends, not Vicom or any of those awesome people, just a different firm whose name you would know. And one of the proposals, and it was a lovely but very canned proposal, right? Do the blog, do the newsletter, do the video, $7,000, blah, blah, blah. And it was like newsletter, $3.99 a month. And then it showed a picture of the newsletter sample. And I was like, oh, I would not show a picture of that sample. It is so canned. I mean, it is so clearly canned that I'm like, why in God's name would you spend $300 a month to send canned content? So you're going to hear me say in the marketing plan lesson, consistency, consistency, consistency. So that would be better than nothing, truly. But that's it because it's all about trust equity in this business because you're answering that, can I count on you question all day, every day. That's what people want to know. David, can I count on you to answer my question as a prospect? Leanna, can I count on you to get my stuff in order and simplify my life and onboarding? Rashani, can I count on you to be there every day until retirement? Joshua, can I count on you to be there when my spouse dies and I need you? They're never going to walk in and say, can I count on you? Ever. But it's what you're constantly showing them. So a newsletter is better than nothing, but a little bit of personal content. Like a paragraph, or if anyone has seen Kyle Walters, who's one of our leaders, he does a 2-minute video every Sunday to his clients, retirees, 8 a.m. Consistent. If he doesn't send it consistently, they call him. And it's literally on, just called State of the World. Like, what's on the news today? It'll be like, what's inflation's impact on my retirement? It'll be something weird, like, what's the RMD calculation? It's just little random stuff, but it's every Sunday. And if you like, Kyle is not a like, put me on a stage. Like, literally, he's just like a regular guy talking regular stuff. And if you think you don't like video, Kyle is literally blind in one eye. So his cornea is white. And you literally, the first time you're watching the video, you think that the reflection is on his eyeball until you figure out, no, that's his eyeball. So I'm like, dude, if he can do that and rock it, anyone can do video. He literally has a bookcase. He sits down, he talks for 2 minutes, and off he goes. Now you practice to get good at just sitting down for 2 minutes and off you go. But the point there is, that is infinitely more valuable by like a factor of 100 than a canned newsletter that you pay $300 a month for. Even Eric, if it's just you in your office with that background doing like, hey guys, I just want to check in. I know the markets are kind of up this week, blah, blah, blah. Like, because what you're doing is you're showing up in a trusted advisor capacity without them asking, which means you're being proactive and you're there because I can count. So what you're looking for is consistent quality content. So again, underappreciated tactics, referrals, listings. So again, any of these can be really effective and any of them cannot. In personal networking, we've got speaking, pretty straightforward, right? What we call thought leadership. Writing is part of thought leadership, but so is speaking. It's if someone just sees your face at a thing, right? When you see my thing online and you're like, oh my God, Stephanie's speaking everywhere, what does your brain instantly think? I must know something. Otherwise, I would not always be at all of those places, right? That's the kind of like, so you've got the in the room credibility, but you've also got the brand credibility that you want to leverage, which we don't tend to do that, but you do want to, right? Every time you're speaking or you're out, right? That's an opportunity to communicate. Seminars, workshops, webinars. This is really where you're showing up in that seat as the trusted advisor guide, can't, right? You're communicating and educating information. You're creating curiosity, right? And then ultimately, if people want more, they'll call you. Client referrals, COIs, we've talked about. Client referrals, cost of an average client acquisition is $4,272. I'm going to ask Michael about this one because for client referrals, you do almost nothing. So I'm curious, what is the actual cost? I'm going to ask him that's being calculated there because it should be really low. COIs, it's actually higher than COIs. And I find that just mathematically, I'm very curious what we're spending on for client referrals because with COIs, you take them to lunches. So it's got to be like big, expensive client events and things like that. COIs, average cost of the acquisition. So basically, it costs you $4,100 and you make $5,000 in an average year, you would be up, right? Basically $800. But that $800 has to service the client. So, as we did, right, you're going to be upside down for a little bit. So, that's where you just want to make sure if you pay for every lead, you just want to make sure that you just have the capital, right, to keep the run rate going. Referrals, partnerships, solicitor relationships, again, right? Personal relationships. Personal networking, key trends, referral generation, as we talked about, is a huge part of it. And it's really 10% of clients are acquired through other means on average. But that segment of the marketing, you know how you heard all those studies for years that were like, RIAs are growing at like 1,000% a year, and it's still a teeny tiny fraction of the wirehouse space that they don't care that much. That's what digital marketing is. We talk about it all the time. Adam does it. Michael does it. I do it, right? Our leaders do it. And for 97% of the advisor population, we're still in that personal part of the wheel. And so what we really want to look at is when we get a good story and a clear client, which is what you do here at Limitless, you are now in a really good position to leverage the digital and the outreach parts of the wheel to leverage what you're doing on the personal networking side. And that's how you can create more leverage in your marketing, right? Because if you've got COIs and you want to triple, you either have to go get three times as many COIs or you have to spend more time deepening the, like there is still a capacity threshold that you're going to hit with those personal strategies that you don't hit with digital strategies. The only capacity threshold you will hit with digital strategies, if they work, is onboarding will be a bottleneck because you'll have too many clients coming in, right? Your ability to process them. When you have that high quality problem, call me. We have solutions. Digital marketing, right? We talk a lot about this, and I want you again, I don't want you to go chase shiny things or eat everything at the buffet. And as you're thinking about your lay the track strategy, I absolutely want you to look at those outreach and digital channels because that's where you create scale and think about where you might want to start building that 3-year runway. There are things you can do now, right? Client referrals, centers of influence, going out and speaking, like that's going to do near-term lead gen. But what's that if you were going to invest in a longer-term strategy that was digital or outreach-based? What would that be? Again, that's not to encourage you to get distracted, but it's encourage you to get clear about where is there an opportunity for you to create scale. And as you build your marketing plan, you can think about, hey, Eric, I'm going to spend 80% of my time on this near-term stuff because my revenue goals are just that's what they are, right? I want to hit these numbers over the next couple of years, then I'm going to like hit my goals and have more margin and I can do more stuff. But I'm going to invest 20% of my time in starting the webinar series or the YouTube videos or the podcast or the content strategy because I want to start to lay the tracks there, right? Because it's a 3-year runway. So we don't want to wait until we want the leads to start those strategies. We want to start now so that 3 years from now, like Adam, right? The phone just rings or the inbox just beeps, dings as it is these days. And they're there because you've laid the tracks and the trains are rolling. So think about, again, if you don't like being on video, don't force yourself to do it. But like podcasts are great, or you can record things and turn them, right? Turn them into articles. So there's a lot of opportunity to cross-pollinate. If you like speaking, we can turn that into writing. If you like writing, you could do literally a cartoon caricature, right? If your audience was like tech execs, and that would be a super cool thing to do, and you would never actually have to show up. If anyone wants to do the caricature thing, it's one of my new fun ideas. Let me know because I really want to do it. Digital marketing key trends, content generation is where it's at. High growth firms are using content because it conveys trust and credibility, aka value. You can count on me in a hyper scalable way. I have pain points and you can speak exactly to them. So it's not just the general marketing of the website, it's how do I do this with my RSUs? I'm overwhelmed with RMD, paperwork. Can I afford, to put my kids through college and save for retirement, right? It's those real life, like you can really micro target to your avatars and their pain points, which is where you can surface a lot of credibility. And then challenges and tactics, right? It's crowded out there. You're not even in, like, again, when you think that it's crowded, discount that. I was talking with someone the other day and he's like, well, there's a lot of faith-based firms out there. And I just Googled faith-based firms and like six or seven popped up and like five of their websites were not great. And I was like, no problem. Right. If you go look up tech firms, there are firms like no, right, with the Googles and the Microsofts and the world we live in, of course, there's multiple firms going after tech execs, but there's plenty of them. Literally no shortage, right? So there's not 50 of those firms. So the idea is really to figure out where you can get traction in the marketplace and then really invest in farming. You're going to show up, right? So Eric, you've got your main field. You're going to spend 80% of your time in your water there, but seasons change and you want to diversify your crops. So, right, you're going to make that your main staple, but you're going to play with your podcast or your blog or your video over here. With 5 or 10, five's probably not enough, 10 to 20% of your time. And again, that might shift if you've already got a stable base of revenue and plenty of clients and you just want to clean it up and grow more efficiently, right? Then you can shift that formula based on where you are in the growth curve and what kind of growth you want to drive. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Audio, do you like to talk? Again, you might just have someone interview you and not put on the video and do like character videos, or you might turn it, right, transcribe it and turn it into content, articles, white papers, etc. Video, do you like to perform? Do you like to speak, right? So if you've got that ability, right, there's a ton of opportunity, obviously, in our digital world and online and speaking, right, to create brand equity, right? Because when people see you, it works the fastest. Do you like to write? Some of you are more like, hey, I like to just be cerebral and I like to write about it and then kind of put it out in a credible way. And I don't want to be kind of the face out there. And that's okay too. What's important is that you think about what each of those look like from a channel perspective, right? If you like to talk, right? Podcast, radio, et cetera. If you like to. So where is your sweet spot? If you're like, hey, I hate this, but five other people are crushing it, I think I have to do it, you're probably not going to excel at it. Now, there is that the mental hurdle of just telling yourself you can't. So like, you got to check that. But if your general personality is not a, hey, I want to be out there, and you're doing it because five other people are, I can show you 50 people who are doing it quietly with content or a podcast or something, right? A lot more suited to that kind of personality. So you want to ask yourself, what's easiest for you? What's energy creating? When you look at that wheel, I'm like, love that, love that, love that, love that. Really, I can do that. Hate that. Like, I'm just not going to cold call. I'm not saying you can't do it, but when I look at it, I'm like, no, I want to build credibility and I want them to call me. I like that so much better, right? So how do you want to show up, and then what compounds over time? Personal networking is great if you're going to the yoga group or you've got COIs, but there's a capacity threshold. That COI or that yoga group or that client only has so many people in their sphere of influence they can refer. Right. So that's great. So you might get a stream or a trickle from something like that. But when you look at compounding effect, things again in those outreach and those digital channels tend to compound more, because if I liked your podcast the fifth time, do I feel more connected and more trusting of you the 50th time or in the 500th? Right. It just compounds over time. So again, that's where you're looking for what's near term when you're building your marketing plan, right? For Eric, it might be 80% is near term. And for someone else, it might be like, clients are coming in, I don't have to worry about that. I want to build the longer term strategy. And that's where I want to focus. So those are the questions you want to answer. How do you curate them? One, no matter what your channel is, the formula is add value, add value, and add value. And you do that by demonstrating expertise. I see you, I hear you, I understand you. But you never say that. I never say, I understand you. I say, hey, I understand that on a given day, your clients are calling and you're trying to keep up. You're doing too much for too many, for too little, for too long. And it's really feeling overstretching. And you really wish you could just be a good advisor. And the clients need to be like, yes, I just want clients to come to me and I do a good job for them. I'm like, I know. Right? To those examples earlier. Right. If your clients are being overwhelmed by RMDs, if they're right asking tax questions, those are things you can show up with. You're going to build an audience. That audience might be your clients or centers of influence, right? If we're looking for anything in those outreach channels that are more scalable, you're literally building an audience. Do you have followers? Do you have a mailing list? Right. This is the audience that you are consistently telling your story to, so that when they are ready to take you up on the story, you're right there and they just raise their hand and up they come. And the third is, you do actually have to make an offer. You have to sell the t-shirt. I did the summer series with Michael and Mark Tabergin and Angie Herbers a couple weeks ago. Shannon Spotwood from RFG, who's one of our good friends, was on the CEO of Under Armour's on their board. And he was giving her a leadership tip mentoring at one point, and she shared the story of, at one point they launched this whole new thing and the marketing team was this and that and the other. And he came in and he was like, don't forget to sell the t-shirt. Like, we're doing all this cool whoopee stuff, but it's like, did you make an offer? Did you say, would you like to buy a t-shirt? Like channels and brand and all that is great, but make sure that in each of these channels, whatever you're putting together, at the end of it, you have to make an offer. Hey, would you like to sit down for a free 20-minute consultation? Hey, would you like to take our free retirement diagnostic? Hey, right, would you like to? Because the offer does not go from, hey, you're in my audience via my channel, to your, I'm your client. Right? The offer is, would you like to learn more with the download? The offer is, would you like to join our mailing list? The offer is, would you like to look at our three-part video series on the biggest mistakes retirees make? Would you like to look at, you know, retirement planning for, you know, people with second homes, right? Like, those are the things that we want to make offers, so that we are creating, what I call them, curiosity hooks. Think like Velcro, right? One little Velcro hook isn't very strong. You get two or three of those Velcro hooks, you get 50 or 100 of those Velcro hooks, that's strong. So when you get in a channel, you're just going to be lining that entire channel with curiosity hooks. Every time you put something out that is related to your client, right, or potential client's curiosity hook, like, oh, that resonated. Oh, I see value. Oh, that sounds like me. Oh, that's interesting. Curiosity hook, curiosity hook, curiosity hook. That's why you only need one or two channels. If you try and spread that water over nine farm plots, it's going to be really hard to keep up. So within those channels, here is the playbook. If you're in the marketing action plan lesson, we're going to go over this later. If not, you can watch that lesson and get the review. One, you're going to define your goals. That starts with vision for success lesson. Two, you're going to identify your audience. That's the niche ideal client lesson. It's neat to note that there is actually a lesson for each step in this process. You're here, choose your channel, right? I know who the clients are. I know how I want to grow. Now I've got to figure out where I'm going to put my time and energy, right? What are the paths that I'm going to clear to let people walk to me, essentially? Next, you're going to create your marketing plan. That's the mapping your marketing plan lesson. Then you're going to schedule your launch. If you are struggling for time, right, go back to taking back your time, look at your annual calendar and your model schedule, because you shouldn't be at this point. You should not be, even in year one, you should have freed up enough time to be able to have some of these conversations. If you're in year two or year three, you definitely should have, which means we took some of that time stuff and we moved on, right, to the next item in the buffet. So really make sure if you don't have time for marketing, we want to go back to taking back our time and figure out how to get it back. And six is you're going to manage the plan. That's with the action and accountability lesson, and the marketing plan lesson is, right, how do we make sure that we're not just throwing ideas out there, playing whack-a-mole and seeing what works? Like, how do we build a disciplined ecosystem? Like, we do it, we manage it, we look at the data, we tweak it based on the data, right? Lather, rinse, repeat. That's the cycle that you ultimately want to get into. So additional resources, obviously there's the choosing your channel lesson and the resources that come with this one. We're also going to be going into marketing action playbook, which a key part of that playbook is to choose your channels, which is why we broke this out into a bigger lesson. Is what I noticed is when people got to that part, they just did the normal stuff. Like, I'll grow 10%, I'll use COIs, I'll do some client referrals, maybe I'll try a podcast or something. We're not really thinking intentionally about that. Right, this, like, what do we want? How do we want to grow? Who are we growing with? What paths are we going to grow through? What's the plan we're going to follow to create those paths? Right, how do we make sure that we have time to consistently execute? And how do we review and monitor that plan to make sure we're doing what we tell our clients to do? Right, Leanna doesn't say, let's build your retirement plan, just put the money in, see you in 20 years. Be cool, wouldn't it? It'd be so awesome. You could charge so much more. That's what marketing is like. It requires your practice, and your marketing should be like your biggest client. How much time do you spend on your biggest client? You have time scheduled for your biggest client. So the playbook is really nice because I literally sat down and said, what's the process we take clients through? And we broke out the wheel. And we gave you ideas in each of these sections. This is not all encompassing. Obviously, there's no shortage of ideas, but kind of the common ones that, right, are known in each area, right? Like, so for example, right, like for website, hey, one of the things you can do is go find 5 to 10 relevant keywords, right, to make sure you're optimizing that. Under social media, here are some things you can do. So if you find yourself stuck in an area going, okay, I want to do social media or I want to do podcasting, now what? This gives you some action items and some starting points so that you can start to fill in that marketing plan. So they're really complementary lessons. This is a great lesson, but you now have to decide what to do with your channels. Like, how are you going to execute time, energy, capital, activities? And that's going to be right followed up in marketing plan. In marketing plan, I'm going to tell you to make sure you're clear on the channels that you want to choose, because that's going to determine how much time, energy, money, and what activities you do. And that's why they go together. But the goal with this one, is to make sure that you really understand channels as you're making those decisions. All right, follow-up items. There's some great reading you can follow. Obviously, you want to think about, as we talked about, what kind of stylistically works for you. What channels sound appealing? What are you currently doing? Like, if you've got clients and centers of influence and you're not optimizing those, that's where you start, right? The biggest mistake we make from a growth perspective is we step over the low-lying fruit. We don't look at share of wallet, we don't look at client referrals, and if we've got center of influence relationships, we don't really double down and optimize those using some of the strategies that we teach, and then we go on and we do other stuff. So we've got, right, the engines are performing at 30 or 40 or 50%, and we're using our gas to go start a new engine, right? Or Eric, to use our farm analogy, right? We've only got this field producing at half of harvest, and we're going to take our resources and start another field, right? So that's where you really, I know it's so sexy to talk about all the other stuff and it's sizzle and it's shiny. If you don't have your client referrals and if you do centers of influence, you have that really nailed down, that's your year one marketing plan. And then, right, pick that third leg. What's a longer term runway? If there's something in digital or outreach you want to start investing in, that becomes the third leg of your marketing plan and you're set for next year. Right? If you're exploring some of these other channels, right, you're going to layer those into your marketing plan. So I'm going to pause here. Leon, I'm sure we've got some questions.
Yeah, there's about three.
I can't see them. Would you be so kind, or whoever asked the questions can just unmute if you guys want to do that?
Roshani has a question, if you want to unmute.
Yeah.
Yeah, my question was, first, how much of a engagement or readership would you need from your blogs to decide that you're doing okay or if you need to tweak something?
How many people are on the list?
How many people? I mean, I don't know. It could be anyone reading it. So, but you know, so I look at the Google Analytics every month to see how the blogs are doing. But my question is, what kind of engagement should I look for to decide, okay, we're in good shape or no, this is
Yeah,
not.
40 to 50% is considered really awesome. Almost no one gets over 50%. So people sign up for things knowing full well they're going to pick and choose, right? I'm on James Clear's newsletter. I probably read 2 out of 10 of them, but I'm not going to unsubscribe because it's James Clear and he drops wisdom all the time and I don't want to miss out, right? It's total FOMO is why I'm on that list. So the trick is when you've got those lists, we want to look at a couple of things. So the goal is to get up to like a 40% open rate, right? 25 to 35% is considered really good, if you will. If you're in the 5 to 10% range, I would be really looking at just the quality of the content overall. So if you're under 20%, you're going to look at content quality. You're also going to look at list quality. So if you're just getting random people and you're dropping them on your list, your engagement rate, starting with your open rate, is going to be low. So step one is you want to get your open rate, which means your audience is engaged. They want to read what you're putting out in front of them. So your open rate is going to be driven by two things: list quality, like what's your relationship with those people, and two, headlines. Three, content quality. Headline is going to, right? If Jay, I know James Clear writes stuff, right? Like our Mojo newsletter has on average like a 45 to 50% open rate, which is really high because I keep it short and people know I'm usually not wasting their time, but they still only open like half of them open it, half of them don't. It's not the same half week to week, by the way, right? It just depends. So the next thing is going to be what's the headline? If I'm like, hey, 4-step playbook for succession planning, 80% of the list isn't going to read it. And that's okay because that week I chose to talk on succession planning. That was intentional, right? If I want something way more general, right, like the three biggest mistakes growing firms make. And so you're going to play with those headlines to see what works with your audience. So you want to look at your list quality. Two, you want to look at your headline quality, which is going to show up in your open engagement rate. And third, you want to look at your content quality. Which you can, it's not like a website. You can't track how long they're in your email, but what you can track is click through. So if you have like, here's an article, here's a reference, here's something, then you ha they have to click through to that and you can track the click through rate. That's where you're going to make your offers. Like, so you might send an email campaign, for example, email one, here's some value, email two, here's some value, email three, here's some value. Click here if you want to download, the case study I showed you in the videos and the 10 checklist questions that we asked Bob and Jane that you could ask yourself when you're facing retirement. And they're going to be like, click. And so what you're trying to do is who's reading my stuff and then who's engaging with my content, right? Because each of those warms them up the list a bit. And then you can do targeted campaigns, which again, we're laying the tracks. But when you got that going, you could start to look at what are people clicking on? Hey, they're clicking on tax topics more, right? So that's where we go to content quality is are you talking about things that they actually want to hear about? So you've got list quality, headline quality, and content quality. And I wish I could tell you it's, you know, it should be a straight 37%. You want to get above 30%. 40 to 50 is world class. And then your goal is to drip value so you can stay in that range. So you want to see your numbers consistently go up.
You know, my question was about blogs, not about newsletters.
Same thing. The blog title. Go ahead.
Yeah. But what is the percentage you're looking for in blogs? Like it's not as straightforward as 30% is clicking. It's you know, you can't get that data. So is it like how many people are visiting your website, and you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So if you look at the marketing dashboard, which is in the lesson in the library, there's a tab for every kind of marketing, right? So if you've got social, if you've got LinkedIn, if you're doing webinars, and it will have like it, right? What are the key data points for each of that? With a blog, it's going to be how many people are on the list. You're going to look at open rates or click rates, because you can get that on the website. You're going to look at click through. So again, you can still make offers in those blogs. So that's where you can start to do engagement points, where you're like, hey, if you want to get a copy of X, Y, or Z, or visit our website for the latest, you're going to start to look at engagement rates. And then you're going to start to make offers in that blog. So you're going to want to look at titles still matter, no different, right? If they're signing up for the blog, presumably they chose to sign up. So your list quality is good. Titles, go back and look at all your titles. What has the highest read rate if you look at your data, right? Which blogs are people reading? Because you'll know that, right? So 10 people clicked on this one and 1,000 people clicked on that one. Tells you what topics they ultimately want to read about. And then you can embed offers in there to see if you can create additional engagement. But if you've got your data, send it in and I'll happily look at it, and we can go through the dashboard and see where you might want to tweak it.
So it's 25% is the threshold.
Well, again, we're talking about that's engagement and opens, right? In your case, it's a blog where they're like Michael sends his blog out in an email, and it's also on the website. So you're going to look at that data from an origin perspective, right? The email would, like if you're sending an email saying, hey, our latest blog is out, which is what you would typically do, then that email is going to have engagement data of people that click over to the blog, which is actually going to tell you something. And if people are just randomly coming to the blog, then you're going to have the website data on the blog, and you want to start breaking down that data. If you can, depending on how your website analytics are set up, you want to start looking at origin data, like where are people coming to the blog from? Are they coming from SEO? Are they coming from one of these other channels? Are they coming from Google Ads, etc.? So blogs are different than email because they're not outbound unless you drop an email to make them outbound, which is what we would typically recommend. Otherwise, people have to be like, oh, it's Sunday, I'm going to Rashani's blog. So I would look at that data. I would look at your subscriber rate. Is your list growing? And then I would look at that click data. Like, are people coming? Are they, right? Are they coming week after week? Are they coming multiple times? Are they coming once? That's the kind of data that's going to tell you about the content quality. Yeah. Think about that. Look at your data. If you want me to look at it with you, just send it in and we'll take a look at it. All right, Leona, other questions?
I think she said mine was up next. Okay. I think you kind of addressed some of it, but in the series that you were just mentioning, you talked about kind of level one, level two, level three, and how it's, and you kind of just touched on it with like the low hanging fruit with referrals. And That's kind of a situation we're looking at now. We just did this big merger. You know, we've got capacity to spend more, but I'm kind of coming back to, you know, the choose your channel, because I don't want us to overlook the idea of we could probably do a lot more on the referral side before we just jump into let's do social or something like that.
It's funny. I was telling you guys I was on the summer series, which hopefully you guys attended. You got the announcement. It was me, Mark DeBurgin, Michael Kitsis, Angie Herbers, our friends at FICOM, Candace and Carolyn. And we were really talking about that, which is that one of the, so there's four basic growth inhibitors in firms. And those four basic growth inhibitors are lead gen, closing rates, referrals, and advisor capacity. Right? Advisor capacity, because once you're at your advisor capacity, you can't grow. And it actually becomes the biggest growth inhibitor once, right, you're at your personal capacity. Lead gen, because we need leads, right? If we can't figure that out, it's very passive. referrals is absolutely the number one thing that we step over. So Carolyn and Candace from Vicom were on Summer Series with me and we were talking. They've got an entire campaign, like a growth campaign that they take advisors through based on share of wallet and referrals. Literally, because we are not brilliant at the basics, as you hear me say over and over and over again. Just like everyone will say, you know, I've got all my clients' money, and you guys have way more than average. The average advisor by sure does not. And for many of you, you still don't. Somebody's got 100,000 over here, or their brother-in-law's with Merrill Lynch and he's got it, or they got that $50,000 in a side account in case they need it, they don't want to tell you about. Like, you just don't know. So there's ways that we deal with that in client experience, right? If you do data input in the software with them and the numbers are wrong, they feel compelled to fix them, which is really cool. Which is a little behavioral tactic. But again, the idea is if we can go back to share of wallet and referral campaigns intentionally to optimize them. Literally, Christian, and particularly in a merger, if you just said our marketing plan for the next 6 months is we're going to crush client referrals and we're going to double or triple client referrals over the next 24 months, what would that mean to growth?
That'd be huge.
It'd be huge. So this thing that we do naturally, which is where mindset and discipline and discernment come in, is we're on our growth trajectory and we're like, hey, I'm here. And we're like, I want to grow to here. And we're like, oh, what's all the really cool stuff? And I'm going to spend $5,000 on this webinar thing, or I'm going to give these guys money, or I'm going to hire someone to this, or I'm going to just like knock a bunch of content out on the weekend. And we stop and ask ourselves, like, what are all those channels? And how, like, what is the low-lying fruit? And it's share of wallet and client referrals. And if we haven't done this, like, why would we invest time and money? Because it's infinitely more, no matter what that return is, it's more time and money than sitting down and saying, how do we want to deal with our clients and referrals? How do we want to talk to them? How do we want to engage them? How do we want to make it easy for them? Mm-hmm. That's a brain conversation, right? That's some lunch sessions and maybe some cash for some client gifts and some little events. But I'm not a huge, like, don't go drop $50,000 on a client event. I'm much more about like micro events. So that's where referrals can be in and of itself. Like, it should be layer one of everyone's marketing plan. Until you've maximized that. Again, you may have time to do other things because there is only so much to do there, but there's 50 million things you can do. It's figuring out for your clients and your audience, aside from obviously the conversation, but outside of that, what structures and strategies are you going to put in place to educate and engage and elicit referrals from your clients?
Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I ask a quick follow-up?
Go ahead.
Where do you see inorganic growth in this kind of growth picture? Because we've had a lot of success with that just through a couple acquisitions, and we've kind of got a few more in the timeline. So I'm just curious how you see that fitting into this.
Each firm has to make that choice. Inorganic growth is very different than organic growth because you're talking about acquiring, in most cases, you're talking about acquiring practices or advisors or capital, right? To then drive all of these strategies, which comes with some right commitments and constraints. Capital, they don't give it away freely, it turns out. So yeah, you're making a choice. This is the choice that I explain it when you think about acquisitions, whether you're engaging in them or right buyer or seller side, is you're essentially looking at answering the question, do I want to buy it or do I want to build it? What's the buy cost versus the build cost? So when you're acquiring a practice, what's the buy, right? What's the practice acquisition? You have a client acquisition cost for each of those clients. What's the client acquisition cost? What is the client acquisition cost for organic growth? They are not always the same number and they don't always need to be, right? Because again, this is, right, you're return, getting return over time. This, you're paying capital now, but you get the revenue now, but you pay the debt off over time, right? So it's basically just whether you're capitalizing on the front end and the back end and over what period of time you're doing it. Does that help?
Yeah, no, I was just saying, because our thought was inorganic has helped kind of get us to a good level where we can really leverage more on referrals and even COIs, because we have more credibility when you have a big business behind you. Yeah. And then referrals are easy when you have more clients.
Yeah, you have to have capacity and you have to want to do that. So capacity, I've seen really a lot of firms take on acquisitions without genuinely understanding the client base they're acquiring. So they're basically acquiring, you know, they're paying a premium in this market for a client base where maybe 25% of the clients are actually worth a premium. right? Because so you just have to be real. Again, you want to look at the quality of the client base. You want to look at the acquisition cost, and then you want to look at time horizon. To your point, it's faster to buy it, right? And then whether it's cheaper or not, it's just a time horizon because now you have compounding interest. So as long as the practices you're acquiring fit, there's efficiencies, economies of scale. Ultimately, you want to look at it through the lens of, is it additive? And then that's very different than going out and doing a podcast or doing COI marketing. Like that is your right rolling up your sleeves and doing the business stuff. So the trick is just to make sure you're ready for it. And then if you're going to do that on a consistent basis, that you build a model for it. But yeah, it is a way to grow. Debbie, do you have a question? We have 1 minute, I think. All right. I think we are at time then. All right. Hopefully this gave you guys some information and some education to really help you get clear about how to choose channels that are right for you, that are right for clients, and that are right really for where you are in the growth process, very much to the conversation with Christian, right? Are you at the beginning stages of laying the track? Are you in the intermediate stages of really like working to hone the craft and really optimize each area? Are you in that third tier where you've got the pipeline really built, and now it's really about how do you amp it up and how do you scale that growth at the next level often, right? How do we scale that growth beyond me? All right, next we have a short break, and then our next session is at the 30-minute mark. So I think you've got about 13 minutes. Is that right, Leona?
Yep, that's right.
All right, you guys, great chatting with you about channels. We'll see you in the next session.